another 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.
Rare collections.
Well, for many years, ABC radio listeners associated prestigious current affairs programs such as AM and PM, and more particularly, The World Today, with the voice of John Highfield. But in his long career in the media, he wasn't always known by that name. In an early incarnation, he was dubbed Johnny High. And only recently, he had cause to recall those heady times. John Highfield, welcome to Recollections. What was that occasion?
Well, that was when Lee Gordon was the entrepreneur who took over Australian music with the big shows. That was 50 years ago, almost, this year, when I was involved with Lee. Lee was an American who came to Australia as an entrepreneur in the mid-50s in Australia. That's the 1950s. And he took over what was then a fairly sparse sort of music scene in Australia. And he taught Australians how to promote big show music, rock music, the likes of Frank Sinatra as well, the balladeers, all of that sort of thing. He had an eclectic mix of people that he brought to Australia, and I think it was Frank Sinatra and a few of those people who really kicked off his career at first. Then he moved into the rock music business, and he also dabbled in places like hamburger joints. He set up one of the first fast food inlets in Australia where you could drive in and get really good service, which we're all used to today with the Big Mac stores, the McDonald's, and so on. But Lee was an extraordinary man as an entrepreneur. He knew exactly what he wanted with his big shows. He knew how to keep the music going. He knew what the patrons were willing to pay the young kids for the various acts and so on. And he'd always have an act of four, a show of four or five different headlining acts to bring in.
So how did you get involved with Lee Gordon? I mean, it's a long way from The World Today.
Well, it is. I was a panel operator at what was then one of the big stations in Australia, Radio 2UE in Sydney, which was headline. It had people like Bob Rogers and Tony Withers doing DJ stuff all the time, and it was one of the number one stations in Australia. Much smaller market, of course, in those days. We've got to remember that Sydney in those days had half a dozen radio stations. It was before FM and before digital and all of that sort of thing. And so 2UE was one of the big listen-to stations with audiences in the breakfast program with Gary O'Callaghan of a million plus a morning, you know, and that it was really big. And ad brackets with six and seven ads in them between very short items and so on. And I was a panel operator at 2UE, having come out of high school into a career in broadcasting.
Why broadcasting for you, John?
Oh, I just had a passion for it from the age of about 13 or 14. It was a toss-up between going as a jackaroo on the land and becoming a jackaroo and a future career in managing a property and in the country. I had lots of relations in the country that I really enjoyed. Or radio. I used to sit at home in my dad's lounge room with an old radiogram and some old commercial acetate discs that I had playing commercials and pretending I was a radio station. From the age of 13, used to drive my family crazy. And it was the only career I could envisage. Anyway, I got the job as an office boy, first of all, at 2UE, and that lasted for 6 weeks. And then I became a panel operator. They gave me an opportunity as a trainee. So I became a panel operator. One Sunday evening when things were pretty quiet on air, they used to do production of commercials in me, you know, when things were running quiet. So you could have an operator on duty who could do dual function, keep the pre-recorded programs going to air and do some recording of commercials in the studio at the same time. And Lee Gordon came in with an announcer who's very well known in Australia, went on to be the voice of Channel 7, Graham Webb.
Oh, yes.
Graham was to be the voice for the Lee Gordon commercials, and Lee Gordon was there to produce them, and I was the panel operator. And all it was a straight read for Lee Gordon's upcoming big show, you know, and Graham, lovely voice as he had, just read the copy straight and so on. And I'm sitting there shaking my head, and this American entrepreneur sitting behind me, watching me, and he said, "What the hell's up with you?" And I said, "Well, you can't sell music shows, Lee, to be honest, with just a straight read commercial. You've got to have music in them." "All right, smart ass," he said. "You tell me how you do it." And I said, well, we'll get the tracks of each of Bobby Rydell, I think it was, or someone like that, and the Everly, the Brothers Everly, as we used to call them, and so on. And we'll get it, and we'll just bring up a brief grab of the music.
Down and down I go.
And then Graham can say in between, Lee Gordon presents Bobby Rydell.
A black magic of love.
The Brothers Everly.
Don't want your love.
And Lee said, I like it, do it. So we did it. And at the end of the recording session, he offered me a job.
Great.
So I became full-time for about 12 months until I missed radio too much and came back into it, and then the rest went on from there.
So, John, how did you learn the art? I mean, it was an art, being able to build the excitement, do all that sort of thing. Who mentored you?
Nobody. It was learning on the job, I think, applying your mind to what was going to work. And in those days, of course, all the big shows, at least in Sydney, were held at the old Sydney Stadium, which no longer exists. It was down in Rushcutter Bay. It was an old boxing stadium, could hold about 12 or 15,000 people. And it had a stage which went round on a carousel thing in the middle of what was the boxing ring. And they built this round mechanism in it so as the bands turned around as they played. So it was like a hexagon, really, and in the centre were the rock musicians on a stage in the centre, and then the bleachers and everything coming down from all around in this boxing stadium. Up in Brisbane, we used to do it in the Festival Hall, which, of course, still exists today, and in Melbourne, the same, Festival Hall, and other venues were smaller venues across Australia. They didn't have really big venues. So it was mainly Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney for the big shows that Lee Gordon presented. And we used to go in and build the excitement by having this on-stage emceeing presence, which was me at that stage. And I used to just do run-up, and we'd have the walk-up music going behind me, and you'd engage with the audience. And in the Sydney one, particularly where it was in the round, you'd get the competing sections of the bleachers working against each other. So you'd walk across to one side of the stage and you say, let me hear it for, you know, the Brothers Everly about to come and we're going to listen. Do you like the Everly Brothers? And you'd get them to all say, yay. And then you'd say, not good enough. I reckon this side of the stadium can do it better and louder. You know, and you'd keep this sort of build-up and an audience engagement going. So as you'd get this competitive thing from the various sections, and then when you had them worked almost into a frenzy of competition with each other, you just call out, ladies and gentlemen, direct from Philadelphia, USA, the Brothers Everly, Phil and Don.
Johnny is a joker, he's a bird, a very funny joker, he's a bird, but when he jokes my honey, he's a dog, he's joking ain't so funny, what a dog. Johnny is a joker that's a trying to steal my baby. He's a bird dog.
Were you into the music then, John?
Oh, look, I enjoyed the music. When you say into the music, yes, I thoroughly enjoyed, particularly, I'd always enjoyed country music.
Right.
As a little kid, my dad bought me what was in those days called a Crystal Radio set. I'm sure that you remember them in some way, right?
I do.
Where it was just where you had to, the rudimentary ones, you had to do what was called tickle, the thing, where it was a crystal and you had to put this little thing on it to make it work. And my dad bought me a little Crystal Radio set, and I used to get up at 4 and 5, as a youngster of 5, 6, 7 years of age, I'd get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and with a little headset on, listening to this thing and listen to the real country music station. I mean, literally country music stations, because in those early morning hours with the AM transmission, you could pick up in Sydney, where I lived, you could pick up Tamworth and other stations that were playing country music. And I grew to love country music. And on a station called 2KY in Sydney in the old days, they used to have every Saturday night Slim Dusty and Heather McKeon and all those old-time country music people. It was called On the Dusty Trail, and it went for a couple of hours, and it was really good country music. And I can remember as a kid of 6, 7, 8, 9 in Sydney growing up in those early 50s, late 1940s, listening to this country music. So the artists like the Everly Brothers and others who emphasised more a country music sound, I really loved because I knew everything about country music in those days.
Back to Lee Gordon, John Highfield. What was he like? You got to know him a bit, I guess.
I did. He was a peculiar man. I think he was mad. I literally mean that. I mean, he had a lot of psychiatric problems. He was a very controversial figure in Sydney in those days. Number one, being an American, there was always a suspicion that fast-talking Americans were here to rob us of something. But he lived in Sydney for many, many years and contributed a lot. At times, he was dead broke, and his paymaster was Abe Saffron, quite a notorious figure in the Sydney of King's Cross and so on, now dead. And in fact, Abe used to pay us on some occasions our wages when Lee was a bit on his uppers with money, as often was the case. I mean, entrepreneurs to this day, as we know, sometimes they're very rich and sometimes they're very broke. Mm. And Lee was up and down. In fact, Frank Sinatra came to Australia and paid his own way on a second trip back in the 50s as a favour to Lee, because Lee had promoted him in America and he remembered him from that. And Lee was on his uppers financially, and Frank Sinatra said he'd bring his band and himself to Australia, and all Lee had to do was pay the hotel accommodation in Australia, that Frank had paid the airfares and the wages for the band to come, which they did. I think that was the tour when Sinatra got cranky with the media in Australia, but it may have been a later one he did that. But he did a free trip for Lee Gordon to help him out. But Lee also lived in an apartment, a very posh apartment on a beach in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and he had this very strange person from France, a very famous figure at the time. It was a man who had a sex change called Coxonel, who was a nightclub entertainer, lived with Lee. And I can remember that Lee occupied the front pages for many days with outrage by the local burghers of the eastern suburbs objecting to this topless man-woman lying on Lady Martin's Beach in the eastern suburbs. She was a guest of the entrepreneur Lee Gordon. So he was always surrounded by controversy. But as a man, I really liked him in many ways. I mean, not only because he gave me something in my life for 12 or 15 months that I wouldn't have had the opportunity otherwise, but he was a man who really felt passionately for the business of being an entrepreneur and of genuinely bringing music acts to kids that they wouldn't in those days. Look, let's not forget, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have satellite TV, we didn't have any of those things. And I know from working as a panel operator at 2UE, disc jockeys like Bob Rogers, who of course is still working on air in his 80s today, but Tony Windsor, Withers or Windsor, he had two names. These guys got their music from America, hot off the press, literally, when each Thursday the records were released in America. They would pay Qantas airline stewards good money on their trips to America with Qantas to go to the Los Angeles record shops and buy them all the latest releases. And they would pay them very good money to bring hand carry those back for the weekend shows. And so Lee Gordon capitalized on that. And so when there was a number one hit with the Everly Brothers, he'd bring the Everly Brothers to Australia.
And this would probably then, John, account for why people like O'Keefe and Johnny Devlin and Johnny Reb and so on recorded some fairly esoteric numbers. Presumably, they would have had access to those records that the DJs brought out.
Oh, they did, and that was and they were very good mates with a lot of the DJs. I mean, there was an essential symbiotic relationship going on there between the local emerging talent like the O'Keefes of the world and Johnny Devlin and Col Joy and the Jacobson brothers and so on. And that, yes, of course.
What about the performers themselves, John Highfield? I mean, I know you introduced Chubby Checker and Bobby Rydell and Del Shannon and so on at the stadium. Do you remember your first show?
It was a guy called Oliver Cool.
Oh, yes.
He
had a song called Oliver Cool. He's the swingin'est boy in school.
Yeah, that's the fella. He was a lovely guy. He was actually a very studious New York Jewish guy. And he was a really nice man, and or boy, I suppose. Yeah, he's in his 20s when I knew him. And he and I, when we were travelling out of Sydney up to Brisbane and Melbourne, we'd eat meals together and just sit down and talk after shows. And he always put on these very studious, intellectual-looking glasses. He didn't look anything like he did on stage, you know.
I'm too wonderful to really exist. It may seem like I'm trying to brag, but compared to me, other guys are a drag. That's an expression.
I always found Bobby Rydell and his manager were fantastic. I remember Bobby Rydell and his... trying to remember his manager's name, but they were very, very nice people as well, and they used to sit and talk intellectually with you about different things going on in the world, a totally different image to what they were on stage, you know. And Bobby Rydell's manager was a former military man, and he was used to regale us with stories about his escapades in World War II in the American military forces in the Korean War, you know. And he was amazing. I mean, he was no Colonel Tom Parker. He wasn't a fake soldier. He was a real one. And he used to tell us these stories just sitting in the dressing room and that about his time in the military. And that. Look, the people, by and large, were really nice guys. Bobby Darin, of Splish Splash fame.
Yes.
He was quite a nice guy. And the other one was Chubby Checker. I had a few problems with him, actually. If you've got time for a story,
he was a
hard man to get down to the stadium on time to do the show, and he was engaged, so to speak, with a couple of young women at the back bar of the Rex Hotel in Sydney once, I remember. And part of my duties for Lee Gordon were to make sure that the opening acts for the show were down at the venue on time, and I was having a hard time getting this bloke out of the company that he was in, and not only that, it was raining on the night, and I couldn't get a cab to get him down the couple of kilometres down to the stadium. And one of Lee Gordon's associates, who went on to become a rather notorious figure around King's Cross, happened to come in to the hotel lobby while I was standing looking very worried, and said to me with his fake American accent. He was known as a King's Cross Yank in those days, and they affected these fake American accents. And he said, "What's up with you tonight, Johnny?" And I said, "I'm having a real problem. I can't get Chubby Checker out of the back bar with the companies in, and I can't get a cab." And he said, "Well, you go and get Checker. I'll get the cab." And with that, he walked out into the middle of Macleay Street, stood with his arms folded in the rain in the front of the traffic. The first taxi that pulled up, he grabbed the customer out of the back seat, put some money in his hand and said, "This cab's mine. Have you got the objection?" In the meantime, I grabbed Checker by the arm and sort of twisted him out onto the street, and we pushed him into the back of the cab and took him down to the stadium.
It's so appropriate that you would twist his arm, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just sort of, you know, pushing him along and saying, "Come on, we've really got to go now. It's showtime." All right, I'm coming.
Thanks for listening to this 666 ABC Canberra podcast. To subscribe to this or any of our podcasts, go to abc.net.au/Canberra.